Welcome to Catholic Answers Live, the program where you participate with your questions about apologetics and evangelization, including the most important theological, spiritual, moral, and social issues facing the world today. Call now with your question for today's guest, toll-free 1-888-31-TRUTH. That's 888-318-7884. Now, from San Diego, Catholic Answers Live.
And a very blessed Easter to you. We are still in the octave of Easter until next Sunday with the celebration of Divine Mercy Sunday, so we can continue to wish one another Easter for a good long time now. I hope your weekend and your Triduum and all of it was very blessed. And now it is time to be joyful and or at least acknowledge the joy at the heart of the Christian faith. I am Cy Killett, your host, and that joy is connected to the resurrection of Jesus, and that is our topic this hour. Our guest is Steve Ray. You know Steve Ray. He's a convert to Catholic Church and the author of three best-selling books from Ignatius Press, Upon This Rock, Crossing the Tiber, and St. John's Gospel. And he does all kinds of other things, including going to the Holy Land a lot and going this year going to Germany on pilgrimages. Steve Ray, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you, Cy. Yeah, Germany this year, we're going to follow Martin Luther and the Protestant deformation. I say deformation instead of reformation. We have a Lutheran convert who's a priest and another Ken Hensley, who pretty much everybody here knows, Ken Hensley, who's a Luther expert. We're all going to go, and we got buses filling up, and we're going to go follow Martin Luther and argue with him all through Germany, all the places where he was. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be called a seminar. We're going to do a seminar and a tour, and it's going to be a great show. And then also we're going to do Mexico in December. I have 8 more trips going this year. I won't mention all of them.
Wow.
But
and Mexico, will you go to the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe? Is that part of your—
Yep. Uh-huh. For a whole day, but we're also, you know, most people just go down there and they just go to Guadalupe. We're going to go all through Mexico City. We're going to go up into the hinterlands a little bit and meet the indigenous people. We're going to actually renew our baptismal vows at the first baptismal font ever in the Western world, brought over by Cortez.
Wow.
And, so we're going to have a great time. It's a very unusual. I don't think there's any other pilgrimages to Mexico like this one. And Germany and the Holy Land. All our Holy Land trips are sold out already this year. The next 4 trips are all sold out. And Lourdes and Fatima sold out in May. Only a few seats left in November. So,
oh, I imagine Fatima will really be something this year. Because it's, in addition to being the 500th anniversary of the beginning of the Protestant Reformation, it's also the 100th anniversary of Our Lady of Fatima, 1917. Yep. She appeared to children in Fatima.
Yeah.
Two
groups going there this year.
And then there's a canonization coming at some point. It's not scheduled yet, I don't think. But there's—
Well, the Pope is going to be there in May. Uh-huh. And I'm assuming it'll be done when he's there. I don't know. But I'm assuming he'll do that while he's in Fatima. And we're going to be there 2 days after he leaves. Blessed be God forever. You know, it's really hard to be somewhere when the Pope's there because of security and crowds.
Oh, yeah.
It's much better to be there 2 days after he leaves and still have all the benefit of it.
Yeah, right. And not get caught in it. It's just a—
Right.
It's—
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, that's good, though. It's a very healthy sign that the Pope draws such crowds even today, or maybe especially today. But the resurrection, the Protestant Reformation, just for one example, we are divided on so many things now, but we are not divided on the question of whether or not Jesus rose from the dead.
We stand shoulder to shoulder with our Protestant brothers and sisters on that one.
And so what is the— what's the kind of— I guess we could talk about this hour. Well, first of all, if you have questions about the resurrection of Jesus, I didn't give out the phone number. 888-318-7884 is the number. 888-318-7884. And what do we— why don't you start us off, Steve, with a little primer, maybe, especially on the physical resurrection of Jesus? Because since the 19th century, there has been a tendency to spiritualize the resurrection of Jesus.
I called a priest a heretic one time.
You
I know it's probably not a good idea to call priests heretics, but I think this guy was. I had just become a Catholic, and I was very excited about it. Evangelicals, we believed in— enthusiastically about the resurrection. It was a real event, the bodily resurrection and so on. And I was sitting at dinner with this group of people and a Catholic priest, and he said, well, it was a spiritual event. And I said, wait a minute. I said, if there was a video camera in the tomb, would we have seen something happen? Would we have seen a dead body get up and walk away? He said no, because it was just a spiritual event. And I said, Father, you're a heretic. I said, if you had a video camera in the tomb, you would have watched a dead, cold, clammy body get up and walk out of that tomb. It was a bodily and a physical and a real resurrection. I don't call priests heretics all the time, but that guy, he deserved it. And everybody in the room agreed with me. The bodily resurrection was something very unique in that whole culture of the Greco-Roman world. They all believed that somehow the spirit or your inner being would live forever somehow with the gods. But there was no concept of a bodily resurrection. The body was actually viewed as your enemy. It kept the spirit trapped.
Right, right.
And death was a good thing because then you'd be released. You could be out and free. See, so why would you want your body to come back alive again? You'd let it die. You know, go celebrate the fact that the body's gone. Burn it. That's why the Romans had cremation. You know, somebody just asked me yesterday, what do we believe on cremation? I said, well, the church now allows it, but only if we affirm that it's not a denial of the bodily resurrection.
Right, right.
And so for us Christians, the fact that Jesus Christ died and was buried in his body, and his body and soul came back to life, that is what was so unique. He destroyed death. There will be a bodily resurrection. Those are all of us who are buried. Every single human being will be raised from the dead again. John chapter 5, 28 and 29 says, those who have done good will be raised to a resurrection of life, and those who have done evil to a resurrection of damnation. But all of us, our bodies will also come back. Why? Because God loves our bodies. He made our bodies. He loves stuff. It's not God just loves spirit. If he just loves spirit, he would have made us like angels, just spiritual beings. But he made us with a body, and he loves our spirit and our body so much that he's going to raise our body up and spend eternity with him. And he even took a body on himself. And that body rose from the dead. So a primer for the whole resurrection thing is that Jesus died and he rose from the dead and his body rose from the dead. And he's the first fruits of all of us who will also be raised bodily from the dead. And I thought it would be fun today is in discussing the resurrection to take a new little twist to it. I did a show a while ago called The People at the Foot of the Cross. It's like a great drama. You've got John and Mary. You've got the Longinus, the man with a lance who's going to run through Jesus. You've got the holy women. You've got the mocking, unbelieving Jews. You've got Simon the Cyrene, who converted during that whole process. It's like a great drama, all the people looking up at Jesus on the cross. But now that we're after the resurrection, I thought it'd be fun to do another drama of the people who witnessed the resurrection. They just think of Peter, for example. He had denied Jesus.
Mm.
And then in the Gospel of Luke, it said at the trial, when Peter denied him, it says Jesus turned and he looked at Peter. Can you imagine that look? So what was going through Peter's mind when he first confronts Jesus after the resurrection? Do you not think that his denial was forefront in his mind? And Mary of Magdalene, she's there at the first moment. And who were the first ones that probably actually saw the bodily resurrection of Jesus? It wasn't the apostles. It wasn't Mary Magdalene. It was the soldiers who were there guarding the tomb. They were the first ones, probably, that human beings that physically saw the resurrected Christ. So I thought it'd be fun to do it if we kind of looked at it from the aspect of the people who first witnessed the resurrected Christ.
That's fantastic. 888-318-7884 is the number. The Lord is risen. What does that mean? We say it now that we are in the Easter season. We often accompany that with the word Alleluia. And all of that is about something real, something that actually happened and has important consequences in our own lives. 888-318-7884 is the number if you have questions for Steve Ray about the resurrection of Jesus Christ himself. We'll be right back with more on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live with
Steve Ray!
Today on Catholic Answers Live.
We've all heard the phrase, the new evangelization. In previous centuries, missionaries would travel to foreign lands to evangelize, but today's missionaries are more likely to focus on fallen away Catholic neighbors or relatives. But what about the old evangelization? The two millennia of Catholic missionary efforts by the likes of St. Paul, St. Augustine of Canterbury, St. Francis Xavier, and most importantly, our Lord Himself. We must not forget the methods they used to spread the faith to the farthest reaches of the world. Our situation may be new, but the essentials of evangelization always remain the same. In his new book, The Old Evangelization, How to Spread the Faith Like Jesus Did, author Eric Sammons provides a practical guide to putting these essentials into practice in everyday use in your interactions with family, friends, coworkers, and even fellow parishioners. Order your copy of The Old Evangelization today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to the shop at Catholic.com or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Catholic Answers Live is brought to you in part by CatholicSingles.com, the website for Catholics who want to meet others who share their Catholic values for faith, fellowship, and love. You can learn more at CatholicSingles.com. Catholic Answers Live thanks CatholicSingles.com for their generous support.
The Catholic Answers Minute. I'm Father Vincent Serpa. In Matthew 28:8, Mary Magdalene went quickly from the tomb on the word of an angel that the Lord had risen. Fearful and yet overjoyed, she ran to announce the news to the apostles. But on the way, she encountered Jesus. "Do not be afraid," he said. "Go tell my brothers to go to Galilee, and there they will see me." If you were told that you would see him in Galilee, what obstacles would you overcome in order to see him? What would you be willing to endure just to see him, just to see his face? This is not hypothetical. There's no doubt we are not likely to be seeing him in Galilee, but we do have the option of seeing him. So the question is quite relevant. What are we willing to endure to see him? How high a price are we willing to pay? If no price is too high, we will see him, and we will know him as he knows us. I'm Father Vincent Serpa for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thank you very much for being with us. We're talking the resurrection today, and I think it's a perfect day to do that, this first Monday of Easter. 888-318-7884 is the number. Our guest, Steve Ray. And Steve, we were just talking at the break about some artifact is the right word, of the resurrection, the Shroud of Turin and then the face cloth of Oviedo, both named after the places where they are. They don't.
Yep.
And
Montepello is, there's a book called The Face of God by a man named Paul Badde, B-A-D-D-E, B as in boy, and it's published by Ignatius Press. And it reads like a whodunit. It's a good mystery read, but it's tracing the face cloth of Christ that was in the tomb, and it was covered over his face. And when he resurrected, when life came back into him, just like on the shroud, which was covering over the whole body, this image impressed itself on this small little cloth. It's not big, but his eyes are open. And when we take our groups there, we have Mass in front of this cloth, and it's kind of eerie, actually. I mean, it's Jesus looking at you the moment he's come back to life, and you definitely want to go to confession before you go pray in front of that cloth, because he's looking right through you. Well, and that is the cloth that was in the tomb.
Yeah, and there's still a lot of controversy about these items, the Shroud of Turin being the most famous of them. But despite all that controversy, there is no explanation for these things.
There's other than God gave us a witness to an event that took place 200 years ago, and it's
2,000.
It's been out 2,000 years ago, and it's been out twice in my lifetime, I guess. And I took groups there both times, and I told the people, when you look at this shroud that's going to be there in front of you in Turin, that is God's love letter to you, written with his own blood.
Amen to that, brother. Well, we have folks watching us on Facebook Live, YouTube Live, and Periscope, and I'm going to go to a YouTube Live question to start us off, Steve, if that's all right.
And this fine with me.
This comes from Tomer, who types the following in on YouTube Live. In Matthew 27, we are told that many people come out of their tombs as the Lord dies and the veil tears. Do we read these verses literally or figuratively? Were they resurrected or resuscitated?
These are, according to the scriptures, and I really have a problem with Matthew. I have to admit, make a confession here. I have a problem with Matthew because he drops these two verses in his gospel out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Jesus dies. He gives up the ghost. He gives up his spirit. And then the temple, the curtain of the temple is torn in half from top to bottom. And then he says many of the people got up out of their graves, rose from the dead, and after the resurrection walked around among us. And then he goes on to something else. Wait, back up, Matthew.
No, you, a little detail on that, please.
A little more information on this, you know. It tells us that I think that when Jesus died, the nature responded. Nature protested. The sun hid behind the clouds. The clouds covered the sun. The earth shook and quaked. And in Mel Gibson's movie, which our family watched again together on Good Friday, you see them all, the soldiers running because things are happening. The temple is shaking. The curtain is torn in half. And I think that even nature protested that its creator was being killed in this way. Nature just said, no, how can this happen? And I think that the whole result is that the power of his crucifixion and what happened there and his resurrection, it's unusual because it puts that passage in context of the crucifixion. But it says after, the second part of it is that, and then after the resurrection, they came out of their tombs and walked around Jerusalem. But Grandma, we just buried you 2 months ago. What are you doing walking around Jerusalem? Can you imagine that? The way Matthew tells us is that dead people who had been buried in the tombs actually came back to life because of, I think, like this great power of the crucifixion and resurrection of Christ. It just did chaos to the world around it, I think. It was powerful. And these dead bodies came out and started to walk around Jerusalem. I don't know how else you can take it. Matthew does not imply that it was figurative, that it was a spiritual kind of, it really happened. I just wish he'd told us more about it.
Yep. But now to the question of resurrection or resuscitation.
I think these are resurrected because it says that they came up back out of the grave. Once you're buried in the grave, the way the Jews did this, the Jews had a tradition, and in my book on St. John's Gospel, it's 450 pages, and I go through all these kind of background to the Jewish culture. They would go back and visit a body in the tomb for up to 3 days because they believed that the spirit hovered over the dead body for 3 days. After 3 days, the spirit realized that the body was really dead, and then it left. And so the Jews would come back for 3 days just to make sure. And even in the story of Jesus, they came back and they rewrapped him and put more perfumes and things on him. And once you're buried, you're buried. And then they put the rock in front. They close you into that sepulcher. You're done. You're buried and you're finished. After the third day, they seal it and it's done. This passage in Matthew is telling that people were resurrected from their tombs. These were people that had been dead.
And at the very least, strange. Even though it's a strange passage, it is a little sign of hope, just as the raising of Lazarus is a sign of hope for us. Like, don't forget the power of God.
Yes. That's why Lazarus had to be in the tomb for 4 days. Jesus stayed up in Ephraim, didn't come down until the fourth day, because by Jewish tradition, it was the fourth day that the spirit had already left. You were certified dead and you began to stink. Bad smells come out of the tomb. Mary and Martha said, if you'd have come earlier, you could have done something. But now it's over. He's already dead and beginning to rot. The worms are starting to eat him. Jesus says, believe in me, I'm the resurrection. And I think what happened in Matthew's gospel is the same thing that happened there. People that had already died and were beginning to decay and smell putrid came back alive. And it was a foreshadowing of what's going to happen at the end of time when all of us are raised from the dead. There's no reason to believe anything else about that passage. Matthew's being quite clear about what he says.
We go now to Bob in Brookerville, Maryland, listening on the Catholic Answers app. Bob, you are on with Steve Ray. What's your question?
Hi, Steve. The question I have is that, you know, after the resurrection, you know, all the readings we read in Holy Week about Isaiah and everything that he's saying about the Messiah, I would have thought that the Jewish leaders, the scribes, Pharisees, would have known the scriptures well enough to, at least in the aftermath of the resurrection, start to connect the dots and really feel like, you know, they completely misread this whole thing and didn't understand and appreciate that Jesus was the Messiah. Why was that so hard for them? Why were they so blinded to not be able to do that?
Well, you and I are Monday morning quarterbacks. We're looking at this after the fact. And we've had 2,000 years of the church to meditate upon it and to teach us these things. So it's kind of incorporated into the marrow of our bones as Christians. But I think when you go back then, they were blinded to this, and they really had a hatred for him, because it says throughout the Gospels that it was a matter of jealousy. He was doing things. He had power. He could multiply loaves and fish. He could heal people. They couldn't do that. And they were waiting for a Messiah, but they weren't looking for a suffering Messiah. They were looking for one. And let's face it, even in the at the first chapter of Acts, the apostles on the Mount of Olives, right before Jesus goes into heaven, they said, "Are you going to reestablish the kingdom of Israel now?" Even his own disciples didn't comprehend what was going on. They still thought he was going to come in, put on a general's helmet and a shield and a sword, and get on a horse and take over Jerusalem and kick the Romans out. That even his own disciples, even right up to the moment of his ascension into heaven, thought that. So I think that the Jews themselves are so furious and full of rage. And they, the Sadducees, were the ones in charge of the temple. They had become secularized, so to speak. They had collaborators with Rome. And they said, if we allow this to happen, they will take our place away from us. And what they meant by that is they will take our temple away. Rome gives us special prerogatives because we are the Jews, and they know that we're stubborn, and we're going, and they've given us certain concessions with our temple and so on. And if we allow this man to be promoted as the Messiah, and who says he's the king of the Jews, who's the king of the Jews? Even they said, there's no king but Caesar. And if they would allow that one card to be pulled out of their house of cards, the whole thing would come collapsing down on them. And I think they were blinded by their jealousy, they were blinded by their rage, and they were blinded by their own desire to keep what they had and to not change the status quo.
Thank you very much, Bob, for that call. And we go now to Angel in Anaheim, California, watching on Facebook Live. Angel, you are on with Steve Ray. What's your question?
Hi, Steve. Thank you for taking my call. I'm calling because I'm having a little bit of trouble understanding. Scripture says that Jesus died and he was supposed to, he rose on the third day. But if we celebrate his death, or we remember his death on Friday, then why do we celebrate his resurrection on Sunday if that would be 2 days later, not on Monday?
Well, you got Jesus said that the Jews asked for a sign. And he said, the only sign I'm going to give you is the sign of Jonah. That Jonah was in the belly of the whale 3 days and three nights, and so the Son of Man will be in the belly of the earth 3 days and three nights. So obviously Jesus wasn't there full 3 days and three nights. So obviously the New Testament is wrong, and we ought to all just go out and become pagans again, because we just proved the Bible is inaccurate and Jesus didn't know what he's talking about. But one of the things that we have to do is go back and understand how the Jewish people spoke. We have certain ways that we speak, figures of speech. So I can say to you, you know, Angel, the other day I said something really stupid and I shot myself in the foot. Now, if English isn't your main language, you're going to say, well, did you go to the hospital? Is your foot okay? Did you have to get stitches? Are you okay? Well, Well, no, I didn't mean that I literally shot myself in the foot. I mean, I made a fool of myself. The Jews also, I hear the music coming up. The Jews also had figures of speech. And when they said 3 days and three nights, they meant any part of 3 days. We'll continue when we come back. I know I got to quit.
We will indeed.
But let's finish.
We'll finish that for you, Angel, when we come back. Okay. On the other side. Steve Ray is our guest this hour. We're talking about the resurrection of Jesus, the historical fact of the resurrection of Jesus. And we'll be right back.
Catholic Answers Live.
It's been called a crash course in salvation history, the perfect addition to CCD and RCIA reading lists. Catholic Answers' new graphic novel, The Big Picture, has set the Catholic book world on fire with its unique and innovative blend of apologetics and entertainment. With high-quality, full-color illustrations and a storyline that's easy to follow, The Big Picture reveals a story full of passion, suspense, adventure, and hope, engaging the reader immediately as our heroes come face to face with the drama and mystery of God's plan for the salvation of the world. It gets readers talking and thinking, captivating and entertaining them with eternal truths presented in a non-threatening way. Get your friends and family talking about things that matter. Order your copy of The Big Picture today by calling 1-888-291-8000, logging on to Catholic.com, or asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Hi, this is Trent Horn, and I'm here to tell you about my new book, Hard Sayings, A Catholic Approach to Answering Bible Difficulties. Have you ever read something in the Bible that confused you? Or has a skeptic ever asked you to explain a scandalous passage and you didn't know what to say? Doesn't Genesis contradict science? Why does the Bible promote slavery? How could God order his people to kill women and children? It's happened to just about everyone. But now you have a place to turn for the answers. In Hard Sayings, I look at dozens of the most confounding passages in Scripture and offer clear, reasonable, and Catholic keys to unlocking their true meaning. After reading this book, you'll be equipped to answer the toughest questions skeptics ask about the Bible. So don't be left without an answer again. Order your copy of Hard Sayings today by calling 1-888-291-8000, by visiting the shop at Catholic.com, or by asking for it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Thank you for being with us on this Monday after Easter, or as we say, Monday of Easter in the Catholic Church. We celebrate a full 8 days of Easter, and then we celebrate a full Easter season that goes all the way till, I believe it's June 4th this year, is Pentecost. Is that right, Nick? June 4th? Yeah. Okay. Oh, now he's looking at it. All right. Well, June 4th, I think it's June 4th. We go till we are done with the Easter season. Father reminded us this morning at Mass, I must say, that the Easter season is longer than Lent. So, and yet many people don't realize that they're in the midst of the Easter season. I think why is that, Steve Ray? You think that we're more comfortable with penance than we are with joy? Or what do you think it's about? Why we seem more aware of Lent than we are of the Easter season often?
I think it's just human nature. You know, once it's like Christmas.
Yeah.
We have the Christmas octave goes. Once we open all the presents and the Santa Claus comes,
right,
and all the hoopla and all the relatives go back and we go back to work, it's over. And I think it's kind of just that once it's over, we think it's over. We don't think of it as continuing. You know, once the presents are open and everybody goes back to work, it's done.
And
today I had guys working at my house and I said, Happy Easter. And they're kind of like surprised. Well, that was yesterday.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
No,
right.
It keeps
right.
going. It's,
right.
It's right. Still Easter.
And when we went to the break, Angel in Anaheim was asking about the 3 days, and Jesus claimed that he would be in the tomb 3 days and three nights and then then rise. And and you were explaining that there's figures of speech involved here, and that figures of speech, they lose their power or connection after a certain period of time. And this is 2,000
right.
years ago.
I had used the example of shooting yourself in the foot. You and I know exactly what I meant. I meant I did something really stupid. Pulled the trigger. But for someone whose English is not, they don't know that figure of speech, or English isn't their primary language, they're going to think I really shot my foot. With a bullet.
Right.
And Hebrews, the Hebrew people had the same. And for them, whenever they said day and 3 days and three nights, it meant any period of time within a three-day period. It didn't literally mean that. And on the third day means Friday he's crucified, day one. Saturday he's in the tomb, day two. And then you've got Sunday he rises, the third day. He rose on the third day. Now, I wrote a blog about this. If you go to CatholicConvert.com, I have three blogs that people might find interesting. One is, how long was Jesus on the cross? Because Mark and John, the two Gospels, seem to contradict each other, but I show that they don't. It's an understanding of how they use time and how they, you know, back then they didn't have a watch. I have an Apple Watch. I can tell you precisely to the minute what time it is. But if you didn't have a watch and you're there on Good Friday when Jesus is being taken to the, and it's cloudy and you look up and somebody says, what time it is? What time is it right now, Si? Well, you're going to look up and say, well, it's about the, it's still morning. I haven't had lunch yet. Mm-hmm. And so you have to, one of the important things that we as Americans, we think so logically and want to be so precise about things and don't realize that back in those days, they didn't have that kind of precision. And you have to put yourself back in their time and in their way of thinking and with their figures of speech and be culturally literate, so to speak, in the context. Now, I put on my blog, first, how long was he on the cross? Another one I put up is, how long was he in the tomb? And another one I put up, it's a little controversial, was Jesus crucified naked. And unbelievable. A lot of people really took umbrance at that, but I think I did a pretty good job defending the position. So there are some things up on my blog about Easter and the crucifixion people might like to read.
CatholicConvert.com is the place to go. One thing we did open with, and I want to, there's a bunch of calls. Actually, calls, lines are almost full. So if you want to talk with Steve, 888-318-7884 is the number. Get that call in. But Steve, I don't want to miss out on the, we started and you said you wanted to say who was at the foot of the cross during the crucifixion on one piece of writing you did. And then you said, well, who saw Jesus raised from the dead? And we never came back to that. So who, Steve Ray, saw Jesus raised from the dead?
This is nobody saw the actual event. There were witnesses of him after his resurrection. And I knew what you meant when you asked me that. I think maybe the only human beings that actually saw him come out of the tomb were the soldiers. The soldiers who were there to guard the tomb. Also the angels who were the ones that I think carefully folded up the Shroud of Turin, which we have, the bodily cloth, and the facial cloth, which was rolled up in a place by itself. And I think they preserved those to be witnesses. And it says that when John and John outran Peter. Peter got into the tomb first and then stepped back in. And John, allowing Peter, the older, to go in first, then he goes in and he said he looked and he saw this and he believed. You know, one of the things that we find interesting is when Paul, in 1 Corinthians chapter 15, it's called the resurrection chapter. It's all about the resurrection, 1 Corinthians 15. Good thing to read today or tomorrow. And he said the first one that saw Jesus was Peter, the empty tomb, and Jesus was Peter. But we know that it was Mary Magdalene. And many mystics and many of us believe that actually Jesus would have revealed himself to his own mother first. It doesn't record that in the scriptures, but it seems proper. It seems like that would be what any good Jewish son would do. And Mary would not have been off gallivanting around. She would have been there to make sure that the body was cared for. But why doesn't Paul say in 1 Corinthians 15 that Mary Magdalene saw him first? It says Peter and then the others and then James and 500 other men, and then Paul. Why? No women? Because at that point in that time and culture, women were not considered to be reliable witnesses. I can just see a whole bunch of women screaming right now. But that in that culture, the women were not considered to be reliable witnesses. Paul is making a case, a legal case, for why you must believe. You must believe because there are witnesses, as though you're in a courtroom. There are witnesses to this Jesus who is raised from the dead, the empty tomb, and there he is with his wounds, everything. Put your fingers in my hand and your hand in my side. And he is making a case, so he's using male witnesses. Peter, the 12, 500 brethren, James, and then Paul. But there are a lot of them. I have a list here. The angels saw Jesus. Obviously, I think they're the ones that folded up the clothes, and they're the ones that said, go back and tell him, which is why Pope Francis said that Mary Magdalene is the first apostle. The word apostle means sent one, one who is sent. Who was the first one who was sent to tell about the resurrection of Jesus? It wasn't the apostles, it was Mary Magdalene. She is the first, quote-unquote, apostle in that sense. You have 500 brethren, Paul says. Some of them are dead, but most of them are still alive and can witness to the fact that they saw Jesus alive again after being crucified. You have the two men on the road to Emmaus. You have Matthias, who is the new one who takes Judas's place. You have St. Paul on the road to Damascus. I have a whole list of them here. Mary Magdalene. The devil, obviously. You know, and it's funny, it says that the devil, had he known, he would have never crucified the Lord of glory. If he would have actually known what was going to happen, he would have never done it. Somehow, right over his head. God tricked him. He outsmarted Satan, and Satan went and crucified Jesus, thought he was going to get rid of this guy. And the next thing he knows, he, in Mel Gibson's movie, I love it, Satan is there, and all of a sudden the wind blows, and he screams, and the wind blows the hair right off his head and his robe, and he goes, ah! He was a witness to the resurrection. He saw it. And then there's also Mary. I think Mary was at the tomb. And the souls, you know who actually was a witness to the resurrection of Christ before any human beings, is the souls in Hades. Hades is not, is the place of the dead. It's not the place of the damned. But it says, Peter tells us in his epistles, says it in the catechism, that Jesus, during the time he was in the tomb, he went down into hell, which is the place of the dead, Hades, and he preached the gospel to those who are waiting to hear, from even from the time of Noah. And he says, guys, I did it. I died. It's completed. I finished the redemption. You've been from the past waiting and looking forward to it. Everybody else, like Cy and Steve, are going to be looking back at the situation. But you guys are waiting for it. I'm here to tell you it's done. It's finished. And those souls waiting for that, what's called in a prison or in Hades, waiting for the resurrection, Jesus, those people saw and knew about the resurrection of Christ even before Mary Magdalene and Peter did on the day of resurrection. They were down there waiting to hear the good news, and they heard it before anybody else on the face of the earth did.
So
kind of cool, actually.
It really is. It's extraordinary the number of people who saw Jesus raised alive. And what strikes me about the 500 is Paul's writing not very long after the crucifixion of Jesus. And so this is something you can check on. Like, are there really 500
20 years.
Yeah, so you can...
Paul wrote to the Corinthians about 20 years after the resurrection, and he said there were 500 brethren, 500 men that had seen this Jesus, and most of them are still alive and will testify to that today. In other words, this is a legal case he's making. You don't believe, it's not a leap of faith where you just kind of jump into the dark and say, oh, I hope it's true, I hope I land. Paul is saying, no, this is factual. This is historical, it's legal, forensic, it's factual. Jesus rose from the dead, we have witnesses to it, and you must believe or you'll go to hell. This is not a matter of faith, just fairy tale stuff. This is evidence, historical resurrection. We witnessed it. We saw it. 500 men saw it. I can call them all in into the court. You want me to call them in right now? They'll witness to this. You have to believe in the resurrection of Christ or else you'll be damned and it's your own fault. I don't like the word faith because sometimes it means, in a modern world, it means fairy tale. Understanding faith means that we have good and sufficient reasons to believe something. This is like a court setting. Paul says he did raise. You have to believe. It's a fact.
Amen, brother. We'll take a little break, and then we'll come back with more on the resurrection with Steve Ray on Catholic Answers Live.
We'll be right back with more Catholic Answers Live.
Our society is suffering from a pandemic of sexual sin. It's everywhere, and the internet has only made it worse. With porn sites pulling in more traffic than Netflix, Amazon, and Twitter combined, this plague is hitting vulnerable young people especially hard, setting them up for a lifetime of misery and endangering their very souls. At Catholic Answers, we're always looking for new ways to help young people. Recently, I, Carlo Broussard, challenged Jimmy Akin how he would convince young people that they needed to be chaste. Jimmy started speaking, and 1 hour later, I was left in awe. I couldn't believe what Jimmy presented on the fly. All I could say when he finished was, "Wow, I wish I'd recorded that." So that's what Catholic Answers has done. Jimmy's just come out with a new DVD called Understanding Chastity, so you can hear the same powerful case he made for me. It'll equip you to talk about God's design for sex in a way that's easy to understand, clear, and persuasive. Best of all, it's the kind of presentation you can sit down and watch with young people, or simply let them watch it on their own. And it's ideal for use with parish youth and young adult ministries. To make your donation and get a free copy of Understanding Chastity, visit Catholic.com and click the Understanding Chastity banner. Or call us toll-free at 888-291-8000. That's the Understanding Chastity banner at Catholic.com. Or call toll-free 888-291-8000.
We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Homeschool Connections, an online provider of courses for your Catholic homeschool, is a sponsor of Catholic Answers Live. Homeschool Connections' website is homeschoolconnections.com.
Call now with your question, 888-318-7884. This is Catholic Answers Live.
Amen. He is truly risen. We are celebrating the resurrection of the Lord, and we're talking about the resurrection of the Lord with our good friend Steve Ray. And CatholicConvert.com is where you can learn all about Steve Ray. And Steve, we will go to Robert in Ridgeland, Washington, listening on 100.7. Robert, you are on with Steve Ray. What's your question?
Hi, Steve. So the questions are just for me. You know, I'm not thinking my theology is better than yours or anything. I'm just trying to clarify for me. So I'm thinking that once it became dark, the Sabbath is over, and so Jesus is free to resurrect any time after the Sabbath is completed. And so I'm thinking that he probably left the tomb sometime. He doesn't need to come to the stone, because like we see, he went through the wall when he reaches to the people in the upper room. He doesn't need to really use the door, so he just took off and started taking care of things he needed to do, which I think you mentioned he went to Hades. And so the angel then, therefore, there's a problem that we need to prove the resurrection is real, and the only way to do that is to have the stone rolled away. And so that's the mission of the angel, is to pull back the stone, and just being present kind of neutralizes the legion of guards to cause them to not be obstinate anymore and make them go away, so that we can get in and we can verify that the resurrection is completed. And so I guess that one of the questions, does that sound about right? Or
I agree. I think that the stone, I had somebody say to me earlier today that Jesus could have just gone through that stone. He didn't need to have the stone moved, and they could have discovered later that he was gone. I think the stone being moved is very symbolic. It is very powerful. The angels rolled that stone away. The Romans had sealed it. They had actually put a seal on it, and they were guarding it because The Sadducees and the Pharisees and all had gone to Pilate and said, the only thing possibly could be worse than what happened is to have his people say that he came back out again, because he said he was going to come back out again. He was going to raise from the dead. And the worst thing that could happen is to have that tomb empty on Sunday morning. So you put the Roman soldiers there and you guard that tomb, put a seal on it. I think the fact that stone was rolled away, and that it was empty, and that it was there for everybody to see. And even though the soldiers were there guarding that tomb and had put a seal on it, they had been overpowered. And that's not a small thing, because for the Romans, if a Roman soldier allowed a prisoner to escape or did not fulfill their mission, and in this case, it would have been to keep that tomb sealed, they were guilty of death. That was an instant execution. If you let a prisoner go free, you did not fulfill your mission in that, you would be executed. So the very fact that these Roman soldiers were there, that stone had been rolled away under their watch, and the tomb was now empty, that is a big, big sign. And I love it when I take our groups to the Holy Land. I always say, now, go in the tomb, and I want you to notice the door is open. Go in and look around. See if you see him. And when you come out, go home and tell your family and friends and everybody else in the world that he's no longer there. The tomb is empty. And I think that is the beauty of that tomb. Yes, the angels were there to pronounce that Jesus had been risen from the dead. The soldiers were there to keep him in. But the fact that that tomb was open and he was gone said volumes. You didn't even have to say a word. The whole imagery said everything you needed to know.
Thank you,
very
Robert.
Very good.
Thank you very much
very
for that,
good,
Robert. We go now to Eric in Tampa, Florida, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Eric, you are on with Steve Ray. What's your question?
Yes, sir. God bless you, Mr. Ray. Matthew,
well, thank
20,
you, Eric.
Verse 1. You're welcome. Matthew 21, it says, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary went to the sepulcher. Is that other Mary the Blessed Virgin? And if so, why is such such an unimportant or demeaning title for the Blessed Virgin as the other?
I don't think it's the other Mary. It's not the Virgin Mary, because in Mark's gospel, it begins chapter 16. When the Sabbath is over, Mary Magdalene and Mary, the mother of James and Salome, brought spices that they might anoint him. So, and in the gospel of Luke, it says that the women who followed Jesus through Galilee, there was a group of women that, and Luke is really, women love Luke because he mentions women more than any of the others and gives them preeminence in many cases. And in Luke, it says that the women who followed Jesus through Galilee came, so that it even implies there were more than just Mary Magdalene or the other Mary, who was the mother of James and Salome. So Mary was a very popular name. And by the way, if you were there, you wouldn't call her Mary. You only do that because you read the English Bible. It says Mary, M-A-R-Y. If you were Hebrew or you were Jewish, you would say Miriam, M-A-R-I-A-M. That was the sister of Moses. She was a hero for these Jewish women. Mary, the mother of Jesus, had her saints and heroes that she looked up to. Miriam, Deborah, all these other, Judith, Ruth, so many others, Esther. They had their saints too. And Miriam was the sister of Moses, and she played the tambourine. And when they came through and out of the Red Sea and had destroyed the armies of Egypt, she sang and danced, and she was the sister of Moses. So any woman wanted to be married, named Mary, Miriam, just like today people want to be named Paul or Peter or John Paul. So this, it was not in this passage being mentioned specifically Mary, the mother of Jesus. It was Mary Magdalene, Mary, the mother of James and Salome, or sometimes called the other Mary. But I do believe that the Blessed Virgin Mary was probably the very first to see the witness to the resurrected Christ. I would think that Jesus would have revealed himself to his mother first before anybody else.
Thank you, Eric. We go now to Greg in Chicago, listening also on Sirius Satellite Radio. Greg, your question for Steve Ray.
Yes, hi, Steve. I call just basically, I know that the church has had some struggle with losing some of the population, the followers, and it's a heartbreak for a lot of some valid reasons, some not. And I think with regards to the resurrection, that's where the rubber meets the road, I think, with being a Catholic. And I'm a doctor myself. And at becoming a doctor, I've become more, I guess, rational and scientific. And I think a lot of people reasonably question the resurrection based on the fact there's no real hard proof of this. And the one thing that brings me solace is some interesting research done on the Shroud itself and the Shroud of Turin. I know we can't hang our hat that it's absolutely 100%, but it's a fascinating way, I think, to at least bring the issue of the resurrection up to people who are perhaps skeptical. And maybe use that as an avenue, because there's a lot of good scientific research that at the very least says, we don't know what caused it. It was not pain. It wasn't whatever else you want to say. But maybe it's just one little hint that God did tap us on the shoulder and say, I'll leave you some physical evidence. And I think that could be something to persuade people to at least look back at the resurrection and say, we have some unanswered things, and we have some scientific data that really raises a good question.
Thanks, Greg. Let's let Steve take that.
Well, I'm going to give you the honor of calling you Dr. Greg, and thank you for being a doctor and helping take care of all of us in our weakened human state. My son-in-law is just now going through his residency to be a doctor, and I've only recently realized how much work you guys go through to do what you do for us. So thank you. And also from the standpoint that you as a doctor, you look at things more analytically and more skeptically, so to speak, because you need to be precise in your calculations and determinations. And I agree with you that I think the Shroud of Turin, the more it is studied, the more it is going to be shown to be an unexplainable physical phenomenon that is a witness to the crucifixion and the resurrection of Jesus Christ. I think that God in his great mercy has kept it undercover, but it's always been there. But now it's with scientific abilities, it's more and more being tested and proven to be the what we said it has been from the beginning. And it's nice to hear a doctor, and many doctors are now doing the same, testifying to the fact that this Shroud of Turin and the face cloth of Montepello are real 2,000-year-old witnesses to what happened to Jesus Christ, and the physical almost picture that you see there of the crucified Christ. Nobody can deny that that happened, that it is an image. The question is how it came about, and no one knows how it came about. And the more we study it, the more of a mystery it is. And I think that, like I said earlier, that it is a love letter that God has given to us in this modern skeptical world for those who have eyes to see and ears to hear and who are willing to give up their own pride and to look at this objectively. It is a love letter from God written with his own blood. And the more people study it, the more it's going to be proved to that be that as we go along. And I think in the end, when we stand before God, no man is going to be without without excuse. No man is going to have an excuse for having rejected Jesus Christ as their Savior.
Thank you, Greg. Moving quickly, so because we're coming up short of time now, Jerry in Plymouth, Indiana, listening on Redeemer Radio. Jerry, if you could state your question relatively quickly for Steve.
Well, all I know is that Jesus, after his resurrection, I'm not sure how long he was walking around, but he was seen supposedly six times. The first time was on the road by two of his disciples, not his apostles. And all I can remember is one of the names started with a C. And then the other two times that I can remember is Doubting Thomas and when after he appeared to the apostles.
Jerry,
and then to
I'm sorry, but you got to ask the question because we are running out of time very quickly.
What were the other three times?
There, Jesus, we don't know exactly how many times he appeared because it says he appeared to 500 men, and we don't have a record of that when that happened or when he appeared specifically to James, which Paul tells us. But he, John chapter 21, he appeared to them on the Sea of Galilee when he made loaves and fish and fed them. Once on the mountain in Galilee, it says that he said, go out into the world, twice in the upper room, once on the road to Emmaus, and once on the Mount of Olives as he was ascending into heaven. Those are the six times.
Wow, you really did do that quickly. I should have let Jerry go on. I thought, well, this is going to take some time.
You told me I had to hurry, Si.
Boy, you did. Carlo Broussard here the next hour. Why believe in Jesus at all is the question. Not just the resurrection, but why bother believing in Jesus? And believe me, Carlo Broussard can handle that. Thank you so much, Steve Ray, for being with us on Catholic Answers Live.
Thank you. And visit CatholicConvert.com. I got all this stuff up there and pilgrimages and a lot of good stuff to share. CatholicConvert.com. Thanks, Si. It was a great time. Love doing it with you.
Likewise, Steve, very much so. Thank you so much. Thanks for joining us on Catholic Answers Live. We got a whole 1 hour more of this coming right up. We'll be right back on Catholic Answers Live.